There you go.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the April 12th, 2016, 1 p.m. Board discussion session. I'll call this meeting to order at 1 p.m. As normal, we will go around the table and ask people about their matters and things to discuss. Mr. Sears, who you are first?
I don't need more. I'm going to pass this first round.
Okay, okay, so let's go to fight.
Yes, I just wanted to follow up. I've been in conversation via email with Dr. Mazzell about the start times for the calendar, and I understand why we're not moving forward this coming year because there really hasn't been time. But one of the things that I would just like to remind the board of is how important it is to have a timeline for these things, and it'll be important. This is the time to start creating that timeline so everybody knows when the meetings occur. Because traditionally what tends to happen is we do have these open meetings, but people find out about them so late that they don't really have an opportunity to really engage. So since we are looking 2 years out, it would really be important for the board to have a timeline early on so that people can plan to attend, to strategize where the county is going to be done, is it going to be done by schools, you know, whatever that looks like. So I just wanted to put that out to make sure that it, you know, that somewhere on some agenda.
I just want to make sure I understand. So we know that, logistically it was not good, and we also had to change the early move-up of the start date. So we're planning out.
Yeah, I just want to be clear, we're talking about the same thing. School start time, as in the calendar start date,
the
time of day.
The time of day.
Correct. Yeah, we're not making any changes for next year.
But so if I understand Mr. Menace's request is that as a thoughtful board, making sure everyone understands, how would you, or maybe the next meeting, can you get back on the landscape of, maybe a very long list, but how would that time, I think what she's saying is respectfully, how would we alert our public, and what would that time look like?
So we would probably start the process in mid-fall of this coming year, to start the dialogue about, hey, we're looking at changing the school start times in the day, and present research as to why, you know, that might be a good thing and that kind of thing. So start to have some town hall meetings in the fall, and that way we can make a decision in the early part of the spring so people can make preparations for daycare changes. If there's any changes to the athletic calendars for the following year, we have time to do that.
And since we have somebody present for the meeting, I'd like to say, the thought of this, maybe you could recap, without being specific, the thought of this was because of some, and it could happen backwards, so please don't quote me, anyone. elementary was earlier because it was more conducive, the high schools were later because the studies show, so that's the reason and purpose for that.
Correct. There's a lot of research out there that shows that the older the student is, that's basically the later in the day they should start. There's actually biological studies that say the teenager, for example, we shouldn't start school till about 8:30 or 9 o'clock. And that the younger children, 8, 9, 5, 6, 7 years old, do better at like a 7:30, 8 o'clock start time. So what we had looked at initially was moving the high schools back about half an hour. That wouldn't reach the optimal biological clock time. We start at 7:15 now, so we were looking at maybe going at 7:45 for the high schoolers. That would push them back a little bit. It would get more close to that optimum window, but it wouldn't push the high school day back too far. We do have a lot of extracurricular activities and of our kids getting work after school and that kind of thing, so it wouldn't impact that too much, just a half an hour. But then we were also looking at, right now, our middle schoolers start second. They start next in the rotation, but we were going to switch them with the elementary, and have the elementary start probably at that 8:15 or 8:30, 30 or 45 minutes after the high school start time, to take more advantage of their optimal learning time, which is earlier in the day. And then the middle school is going to be shifted to the third slot, probably about 9 or 9:30. We had transportation look at that initially. We didn't get real big data back from transportation that we were confident that we could make that move. Since we were kind of late in the year, we hadn't engaged the community. Some of those things I talked about a minute ago, you know, changes in childcare, changes in athletic schedules and things like that. We haven't done the work early enough that we decided to plan for this year. But there is a lot of research that shows that the older students do better later in the day. When I was in Brevard County years ago, we switched, and first period attendance jumped dramatically. This first period attendance in high school was very low. And we moved it an hour later, and they started coming to school in the first period. First period was later, so I don't think they came to school any earlier than they did. But. So we were looking at that. So the idea would be to look at that in the future, but involve the community from the get-go, so we got their input. Some other districts around the state have done it, but they've done it for budget reasons. And in fact, I've read an article about Osceola County maybe looking at moving back to an older model where the high schoolers start sooner to save money. So this isn't, we're not looking at it as a way to save money, but we certainly wouldn't want to do it if it was going to cost us more money. And that was one of the things we were asking transportation was to show us, would it cost us any more money to move these around? Some of the information indicated that it wouldn't, but some of the information indicated that it would, since we didn't have a lot of information we decided from.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to see if you start in fall, that would give you an opportunity to really reach out to stakeholders and just make sure you use different methods to alert the public and stakeholders about the conversations.
One of the items I had on was the board attorney evaluation. There have been discussions, however they were brought up, whether it was RFPs with the for new attorney, you should be evaluated, and actually I think Ms. Menes, it was one of yours issues a while back, but I, you know, I did ask the Stang to look for any evaluation forms, couldn't find any. I really feel, and it's just because the government that I came from, I agree, that's why it's under my, it's my philosophy that, well, on city council, we hire three people. We hire the city attorney, the city clerk, as well as the city manager. And we would do a year, but this part I didn't agree. It was very painfully public. And at one point, we even had the mayor, Sebastian, get up, and she walked out during the evaluation because she didn't like what someone else was saying publicly, which was not profanity or anything, but she just didn't like, she disagreed. So that was to the opposite. I think that was too public and too trained, you know, but I know that when we evaluate the superintendent, the other person we hire, we do it, you know, at least I have done it, and everything gets collated, there's a format, and then it's available for public record. I just feel if we hire someone, we pay them, we should give them kudos when in the areas that, you know, their strength and maybe record criticism in their weaknesses. That's my philosophy, but as I said, there are no forms available. There are, so as far as an evaluation, unless someone else has any ideas, I would personally just get with Ms. DeGrasse myself.
Yeah, well, I'm very surprised that there are no evaluations because I recall specifically when this was brought up, and I know Ms. DeGrasse helped Ms. Stang, but I recall that there were forms because I had a binder, and in the move, I got rid of it, so it may be stored somewhere in the warehouse. But I recall there being specifically at least two examples of forms that are used by other school districts. Now, I didn't realize that Ms. Stang was unable to get that information. Otherwise, I would have tried to find a way of contacting other school districts.
Well, and
they also exist.
Yeah, and then that's the first problem. The second thing is, collectively, is there a consensus that you'd like to do something like that? If not, then, you know, I mean,
right,
but
why waste
time? I'll just have a nice, you know, what I would do privately with this, the rest of, you know, on my, based on my opinion. But so I don't know if anybody wants to chime in, but that's really why I put that on there because it was a continuing conversation. Mm-hmm. Any input from anyone?
I don't agree with it, but that's okay.
Okay. And so that was my item.
Yeah, and I would just like to say for the record that I think that it's a little dysfunctional for a board to hire an employee and to only have the chair have conversations based on the chair's personal opinion. About, I mean, to me, that shows a lack of
sure.
due diligence on behalf of the board. Of course, moving forward, it seems like that is the consensus of the board, but I would like to go on the record as saying that that is a very, you know, biased way of evaluating and really looking out for the interests of all stakeholders when it's only one person's perspective. But I understand.
Well, no, I was going to say, you know, I mean, anyone here, if there's not a consensus at the board and corporate, but I would highly say, please, Ms. Menace, I know you're, you know, very involved and engaged in your participation. So by all means, it's not I'm just going to do it. I'm just saying if we don't have consensus that we do it as board corporate, please, by all means. Because that's just my philosophy as well. I think that I would, you know, I myself, we get critiqued every day, as you know, and emails in the paper. And I just think that a lot of good can come from it as well. Yeah.
It would be one thing if we were evaluating the work that she does just for this board, but she works 2 days, I guess, full time almost with the regular everything that goes on the superintendent. So you're talking about a real difficult issue to try to figure that out. Because I don't know that anybody on this board, as irresponsible as we are, I think I just heard that, could say anything negative that we have had from this young lady. That's my opinion now. But the work that she does as superintendent, you know, maybe even though she works for us, she works for him. So maybe he needs to review. I don't know, but I, you know, it's a difficult thing to review a person that doesn't work for us full time. And she doesn't. I mean, that's not all she does. She works probably, 85-90% for you as opposed to this board.
And I appreciate that because I have not thought about that. I know you're trying to, what you're saying. I think physically she's in contact and like you said, more around staff and Dr. Rendell. I know that she fully works for us and by our direction. But where is that line? If we could say that she's doing a wonderful job, and you know, so that again, so how do you carve that out? I do appreciate your input on that.
Thank you. I'd just like to go on record again saying that I would be very comfortable with an objective 360-degree organizational tool that may be weighted to the superintendent. I certainly don't see any issue with evaluating the one of two, possibly three employees that this board hires or chooses to release from hire.
I just want to use this because I agree what you're saying, and I hear what you're saying because we've always had that without naming the person, our executive assistant. There's always been that delicacy of she works for us, but hardly ever sees us. And what does she put her vacation time in with? So there's always those, I agree with you, there's always those things that kind of muddy the waters as to who they work for and how you evaluate them clearly when somebody might be spending more time with them, even though on paper they work for us. Mr. Cross, when you're talking about, so I understand what you're saying, about 360 document, you're saying that maybe we should just look, should I continue and then go back out and see if there's a form elsewhere and bring it back to the next meeting that might have that, or do you know where that such type of...
Sure. In the leadership community, there are a number of standard, Soskin has one in leadership analysis, reviewing executives, there's, you know, and you can pick the lines or which ones you don't want to use, you know, they're conscientious, whether they're a team builder, whether they're whatever, and then obviously job-specific performance, which would be, you know, how we do in the course of things like that. So those exist. However, I think that in other districts, there's also, in this district, please answer, if you have information on this, they bifurcate the board attorney and the superintendent attorney, even though the superintendent is the most often, the greatest point of contact, if you will. Really, the attorney's job is to keep the board out of trouble, and the superintendent really is there to sort of facilitate that process, provide the expert day-to-day support. But I think ultimately the board is the one that is being served. I'm not sure the superintendent. The superintendent is a trusted advisor.
So how about I bring take that to the next meeting, and I can check with St. Lucie and Bernard and see if they have a form for their attorney. Bring that back and just look at it next meeting.
Sounds good. A lot of times in the superintendent's situation here, he worked for us, and at the beginning of the year, beginning of his contract, we put down his goals and objectives and what we're going to review him on. What are we going to review our attorney on? Have we ever set any goals?
And I don't know that we do the review. I'm not saying that we're going to, we're just going to say, okay, right now we'll do a review. That's part of the process. You're absolutely right. Maybe if we get some forms, maybe if we discuss really, you can't grade somebody if you didn't give them direction. You can say, wow, you kept a sample.
We're not
thank you so much. Lawsuit? No lawsuit. But, that's a difficult grading scale. So you're absolutely right. But I'm just saying, I just feel that if we're spending money, and a lot of money, whether it's Ms. DiAgresta or any law firm that works for us, we only hire two people. And I think that it's a good process. It's healthy to be able to tell somebody, not one at a time on the phone, and you're doing good, or to say, you didn't get that back to me in time, or, I think that because we can't talk to each other, that's a difficult process too. So if, I'm having a wonderful experience and somebody's having a not so wonderful, you may never know. So whether it's with Ms. DiAgresta, superintendent, as I said, I've been a legislator before, and you have too. And so it's just a way to get everybody on the, let's see how we do, how's my driving, how are we doing. So I'll check with those two other districts to see if they have a form and if people could in their mind think of any direction as far as the criteria as how we would, kind of goals or anything. And we'll, move on and maybe talk, just keep it revolving.
Is there any way that we can use our archives to locate the forms? Because there's got to be a way you could do a search with all this technology we have. If she got them, they were.
I will go up the flagpole again. I had asked Ms. Stanton to look, and she said, unfortunately, she couldn't find anything. We will try to resurrect that as well, because you're saying you don't want out, or you had one, or
it's just the board.
Yeah.
Not what's here on the board, but we did that. There was a binder that had them. So.
Is this your name? Is this ring a bell?
No,
it's not. All right, but that's so.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. I don't recall us evaluating Judy. Do we evaluate her? Have we evaluated her?
She works in.
Go ahead.
It's my understanding that the superintendent prepares the evaluation and shares that with the board chair.
So the board doesn't evaluate the other employee that we have.
Given the feedback.
Right.
In the past, the chair is in contact with the superintendent around the evaluation, but the board members are asked to give feedback at that before it happens.
So why wouldn't that same process work with the attorney who works 85-90% for the superintendent?
Because I see forms where there's a little bit more accountability and the board is more engaged, and I thought that it would be appropriate to bring it up to the board. We're not trying to do something that is cutting edge. It is practice in some school districts to evaluate the board attorney, and that is why I brought it up, because those forms exist. We're not going to be inventing the wheel. So that's the other perspective.
And like I said, it's an oddity. You're absolutely right, Ms. Casey, because when I was on city council, the city attorney sat 24 hours a day, 5 days a week in that office. And yet we were the ones that evaluated them. And unless you were maybe a retiree council person who plopped yourself in there like a mushroom in the office and wouldn't move you and stole the time, it was very little, so it's just the way our government is working. But I just still at the opposite don't want to have no input. So I just, I thought
I have a takeaway. I'll check with those two districts. I'll check with Ms. Stang or Ms. Posell or maybe Ms. DeGreen to check archives. Any input on what you feel, and we'll just kind of run around the table next month. Mr. Frost?
No. I'll say all I have for you reports today. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. McCain? Mr. Stacey?
I have a question, and I keep bringing this situation up. Is there anybody else on this board that is interested in taking another look-see at this deal that we've got with this Coach Joe before the final thing comes down from Tallahassee with the hearing? Is there anybody else that's interested? And we know after the other piece of evidence that came in last week, or a couple weeks ago.
I don't think it was that news, but it was
Another piece of research.
Another piece, but I didn't view the tape, so I would. Two tapes, I don't know if you saw the tape.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and I actually have gone through and read the letter, and the letter does not represent what is viewed on the tape. So there is a disconnect between what we're seeing in writing, and if somebody reads the letter and views the video, the interpretation given in the letter contradicts what you see with your own eyes. So that's very interesting. And the letter does not even mention the second video, which is also very damning. So I don't understand why this particular person has chosen the interpretation of what you see on the video. So I would be interested in following up because there's a discrepancy there. And having watched the video, I also felt very concerned. And it's a liability for the school district that someone could behave that way and we would retain them. If they do it again, we had the power to do something and we chose not to. So I mean, I'd be willing if the majority thinks that that's important. But I think we have, I don't need to pursue that.
I just have a question for the attorney, because it was not inter-office or not any product of the school district. Is it normal for I understand it was an email from one party to another, but is it normal for an attorney to give an opinion like that?
Every prosecutor's office is a little different, so I don't really like to give you a rule of thumb, but all prosecutors, that are elected, you have an elected state attorney. I call the prosecutors a state attorney here, and that individual establishes their internal procedures for intake. Something has happened, some law enforcement agency presents the facts, and then they have an internal process to review that information and to do an intake to prosecute or to analyze and say their thank you and to pass it back. So the process here in Indian River is going to be different than the process, say, in Brevard or St. Lucie. Everybody does their own. Some do have a detailed memorandum essentially saying why we will prosecute or why we won't, and others is just a yes or no, you check the box and that's how you get. So everybody's process is a little different.
Well, personally, I find it irresponsible of that person who wrote that letter to comment on a student's past behavior, because every incident should stand on its own merit. That's just my opinion. It's just like if a priest was driving while intoxicated and ran over a family, I wouldn't say he's a priest and that person's been arrested, so they're not, I wouldn't give opinion. Each incident is based on its own merit. So this is with the DOA, and unless there's any consensus, Mr. Searcy, to change, is there any consensus to remove it from the DOA?
I'm going to have some more conversation about speaking with the attorney about who can know what this is now.
Certainly. Thank you. I wanted to ask about Title I schools, but I think Dr. Bill is going to be talking about that later, so I'll
wait. We're not going to talk about it today, but in 2 weeks at the workshop, we have a presentation on the Title I schools and the supports we're providing.
All right. And so I guess if that's not, I just wanted to thank Dr. Rendell. There were some complaints, and I know that the chair was aware, and I think the board around the issue of prayer in schools. We've been hearing from the Freedom for Religion Foundation. And I just really want to thank Dr. Rendell for following up, because there were videos that showed that we were in violation. And I'm glad that Ms. Diagresta is putting together information that will go to all the schools so that we are in compliance and we are respectful of the diversity of our student body, and the adults are aware of their responsibilities. So I'm glad that that's not being ignored. Sometimes those things are so touchy that nobody wants to talk about them, and that affects kids when the adults don't do their due diligence. So thank you, Dr. Rendell.
As a follow-up to the last time the board was together, we were within meeting with the NAACP, and there were some issues and some discussions of the code of conduct, possibly, from the audience, not so much the board, what may be a change, based on symbols, should there be a dress code. So I just had the time and said I would put it on our discussion list, and I have also had a conversation with Dr. Rendell, who said he was meeting with the Code of Conduct Committee, which should have already taken place. So this is a good opportunity to, if there's any input from this board or any desire, feel free to bring forward, and or based on what Dr. Rendell can tell us, what was some of the input from the committee.
Sure. So I was already scheduled to meet with the Code of Conduct Committee last Thursday. They meet on a regular basis, and they had asked me over a month ago if I could come to their next meeting, which was last Thursday. And so I was already scheduled to meet with them. So when I met with them, we talked about, they had some general questions unrelated to dress code or any other new issue. So we talked about those kinds of things, and then I left, and they had a discussion on really the dress code at the secondary level, and whether there should be changes to the dress code at the secondary level. It's my understanding that they talked a little bit about whether we could bar certain symbols, come up with a list of symbols that we could bar, or slogans, or things like that. There wasn't any traction for that. They did not seem to be in favor of that. And they talked more about going to a unified dress. In other words, would we say all of our secondary schools would have solid colored shirts and khaki pants or something like that. So they discussed that. They didn't come to any resolution or recommendation. If you recall, the board had a discussion earlier this year about the middle schools going to a uniform dress code to take advantage of some dollars that were being offered by the state. And the board said it's really a local decision for that school community. The administration, the community, and the SAC team, whether they vote to pursue uniform for that kind of thing. So the feedback I got from Dr. Torres-Martinez was the Code of Conduct Committee did not recommend any changes to the secondary dress code. If the individual schools wanted to pursue something like that, they thought that would be a good idea. And that's all the feedback I got from the committee.
And that's what I wanted to add, and that's kind of where I wanted to know where it was at, because I happened to be on the Agnes Peoples, the chair sits, and I had two principals sitting right there, and I did ask, hey, you don't want a uniform code? Yeah, we love a uniform code, which I thought was surprising, except for they said, but it's a problem, because ISON has an ISON, Polo has a Polo. Then the Polo emblem gets bigger. Then the Nike emblem, it's a blue shirt, but the Nike emblem gets bigger. And then I got to send this one home, but I didn't send this one. So it begins to create more problems than it's worth. And it was just a quick blurb. And said, I was actually surprised that they were more in favor, but they said it comes with a lot of, I got to get people out, I got to go home, put on a different shirt, get it. It just becomes so problematic. So I'm glad to hear that you say, it's really homegrown by that school through the SAC committee and I think those changes.
You have a comment from the audience.
Sure. Let me just say. That's okay. The SAC committee, and they are very easy to do. The SAC committees and everything can bring that up. And I really feel that the schools are autonomous. But I have one more question. Maybe I'll leave it if somebody wanted to say somebody had some input.
we like to guess it.
Well, it's a question. I've talked to two of the members that were on the committee, and one, Scott, I'm sorry, is not here today. But the discussion, and that was one of the things she called me concerned with, because she was representing the NACP, that there was no discussion if we were talking about the same group, that the direction was skip the first four sections and we'll start with section five. And there was no discussion of the dress code clinic in that meeting. So I'm really baffled by the statement that it was discussed at that meeting.
Well, I left the room so the committee could do its work. And it's my understanding that they did discuss it, not in detail, but they did discuss it. They already had on their agenda to discuss items, sections 5 through 9. And they already calendar that. And, when I was in the room, we did offer the floor. If any other questions for Dr. Rendell while he's here, any other things you guys want to discuss while he's here. And it wasn't brought up. And then after I left, like I said, Dr. Torres Martinez runs that protocol committee. And when I talked to her the following day, I said, what was the discussion, and the summary I just gave is what she gave me.
I just had a question, sorry, were you at the meeting?
No, I'm not.
A follow-up question. It was Dr. Torres Martinez at the meeting, but she's here, maybe yeah. She could clarify. Ms. Ashley, on the...
Yeah, we're going to see up there, but we're
going to say it just to you.
An activity that Dr. Rendell expressed our first part of the meeting, but it's not, this is the last meeting. We've had several meetings. Dr. Rendell was there to answer any questions that were posed by committee members, and he was invited by committee members. And the formal activity were sections 5 to 9, and they were actually given the assignment prior to the meeting so that they could have their notes and highlights and selections, and then they wrote the feedback of whatever they wanted to be considered and put it in post-its notes, and then we did a walkthrough where people actually put dots on what they preferred so that we could consider those revisions. And at the end of the day, we went around in a round-robin type of fashion so that anyone could ask any questions that was anyone put at that point. At the end of the meeting, at 5 o'clock, they were also directed to send any additional questions or comments to me that they may need answered.
Could you give
me
some?
I did give one.
Related to this subject?
The question was not related.
So the question is, was the dress code discussed at that meeting?
It was informally discussed. Some people talked about actually holes over the knees and things like that.
So there was no mention of the issue of the flag?
Not during the meeting.
And they had people the time? You're
correct. Correct. We did it as a core team, because there's a core team, the design team, and we're some of the conduct and the actual work that goes into it. As a core team, we met, and I did tell the committee members that we had crafted some unofficial language and sent it to the attorney for a review, but we were pending some feedback from it. But it's nothing very specific. It's kind of vague, just expanding some of the dress code indicators within the code.
Well, then,
I do have the follow-up questions that I got from
My follow-up question is, was there someone from the NAACP there, and that person did not bring up the Confederate flag?
No.
Okay.
Are they allowed to have input?
Everyone was. At the last activity of the meeting was going in a round robin, if anybody had any questions. And kind of knowing some of the issues at hand, our core team does know the issues at hand. We did the round robin piece, and I do have the questions that were sent to me after the meeting. There were other questions unrelated to the specific question you asked.
What's the normal process on that? We assign the committee a task, and we expect you folks to come back to the superintendent with a recommendation and you bring that up, correct?
Right.
So at this point, that's not happening. Have you ever made a recommendation?
The work is not completed. The meetings were done, but as I said, we also had them to send us additional questions and comments that they felt that they still needed to have more input. So it's still an open process, as you know, the requirement is that once we get to that point, we will review it with the superintendent, the attorney will review it, bring it up to the board for review. So we're nowhere near being completed with the process.
The meeting just last Thursday, right?
Mm-hmm. And we left it as open for input. They could continue to provide us input if they wish.
I do want to add that the first part of the meeting was for me to respond to questions they submitted to Dr. Martinez before I arrived. So there was an open opportunity to submit questions. And so, up until that day.
Yeah, and in addition, we still open the floor for questions.
And also, just the reason for this is we can, at the time of the FMAC meeting, which I think was their need to discuss this, but it was unfortunate because it was took a lot of time away from, I don't know that we got anything through the DSAG information, which is what it was set up for. However, it was very important we listened, and there was a time element, so I felt the need to ask Judy to put this on the agenda, but for discussion only. But at any time, doesn't take a meeting with the FMLAC, any time, because we ultimately are the decision makers. So it's either we have consensus to change the code of conduct and do uniforms. I can tell you right now, we never play with uniforms because of what Dr. Rendell said with the SAP issues. I really feel that should be the autonomy of the school to be homegrown through that sentiment, because those principals have to deal with that. And as far as the code of conduct, and at this time, I'm not looking to change the code of conduct. In fact, there's some work with it. But I've seen this, not this board, a board that I was on, which was on this school district, that we even had recommendations from magistrates that we did not take. So we are, at the end, we're the ultimate person that when the information comes back, we'll be making the final decision. But and I know that you mentioned hearings, but for me, I think that the board, the committee is still vetting the process. I know Ms. Domenico must say something, but I also would like the attorney at this point, because I did ask her to also at that meeting to maybe do a little gathering of information from a legal point of view on banning symbols and or practices and so that we're fully informed. So do you want to speak? Do you want to get the input?
Oh, absolutely. And I emailed the board members on Friday a copy of just the sampling. I certainly didn't do a comprehensive summary of all the cases that dealt with Confederate flags or other symbols on public school property. I have other copies with me if you would like more, or if you didn't have a chance to read the email, certainly pass them around. Essentially, what I did is summarize the two U.S. Supreme Court cases that kind of talked about what we can and can't do with regard to restricting student speech at public schools. And then I went into the three 11th Circuit court opinions that are out there. And I wrote some of the 11th Circuit court opinions because that federal court has jurisdiction over the state board, so I wanted to focus on what was really going to be pertinent to us. And I know I summarized those cases for you as well. I did mention a case from another jurisdiction where the banning of a particular symbol was not upheld, and the court basically said, look, you haven't given me enough here to actually make a decision on it. The circumstances surrounding the banning, what was happening at the school, what the students doing, what was the purpose for doing all of this. So that kind of gives an idea that we can't, it's just not some willy-nilly decision, but it must really be based on underlying facts. And then I provide you with one other example to really take the context away from a particular symbol, but to say student behaviors on campus, on a school campus or at a school event can be restricted when there are dangerous behaviors involved, when safety is a concern, when there are threats, that sort of thing. And that's the case involving the American flag, where the principal directed students not to wear the American flag on a school campus on Cinco de Mayo because of the racial tension at that particular school on that particular day over those particular issues. So just to kind of take it away from one particular symbol, I wanted to maybe broaden it, that we're really talking about intensity of what's going on. Yes, thank you. The intensity of what's going on in school, perhaps what the history is there, what administrators are forecasting might occur, that sort of thing. So I put together that information and got it out to you on Friday, maybe light meeting over the weekend. I can certainly answer questions if you've had questions. Again, contact is very important. I think when you make these sorts of decisions.
Yeah, I think, you know, ultimately, this isn't about banning or not banning. It's not about changing the code of conduct or not. I guess my question would be, does this board, do our principals, do our students feel that these displays of the Confederate flag are in any way detrimental to an environment of learning? On page 2 of this document, based on the Fraser case, it says, even if disruption is not immediately likely, school officials are charged with the duty to inculcate the habits and manners of civility as values conducive both to happiness and to the practice of self-government. To do so, they must have the flexibility to control the tenor and contours of student speech within school walls or on school property, even if such speech does not result in a reasonable fear of immediate disruption. So the point I'm trying to make is, it's not just that these kids are going to have a fight, but if these displays are intimidating and make some students feel uncomfortable, being in a space where you don't feel safe is just not conducive to learning. And I think that I don't particularly think that banning it is the answer. But what can our school do, or what can our district do to start changing that culture where there's more respect? And instead of just suspending kids and kicking them out of school for doing, for bringing a flag or wearing a shirt or whatever, why aren't we having conversations? And that takes some skill set, maybe some learning about how to facilitate conversation. But I think in the end, you know, that's more important, because they can still bully each other and send these things via email outside of school. And, you know, outside of school, this is happening. My concern is there any basis for believing that this is impacting our students in any way that is detrimental? And if there is, what can we do to foster a climate of respect among our students and with adults also? Because there are some instances of adults feeling some of that racial tension themselves. You know, so if we think, no, these are two isolated incidents and we have nothing to worry about, if that's really what the district believes, then the district is not going to act, right? Because there's no problem. But if there is a problem, our challenge to ourselves is, how do we address this in a way that respects students, so students do not feel disrespected in their own school that they have to go to every day?
Well, I would probably say that I would never knee-jerk without specifics. I would need specifics, and I don't think that I'm seeing a consensus, and even from you, from banning symbols or whatever. So we hire a good administrator to foster that, deal with that, and I feel that's totally Dr. Rendell's job. Because if we're policymakers and we deal with budgets and finance, and he knows, you know, and I trust his judgment. And I know that in this case, he worked swiftly with all resources. And he even responded to the Gifford Youth.
It was just a community meeting.
Community meeting. I asked him, and he responded. You know, I think he even put a call to Tommy Brown. Didn't get before that meeting. He got a call back at that time in a timely fashion for whatever reason. But he made, our administrator made the action. And I feel if
If this board's going to discuss policy change, then we get a consensus and we discuss policy change. If not, we have an administrator. It's his job to do that after hearing how we feel.
If we were to take the action I think that I'm hearing there and maybe remove the flag, we would have to remove all the computers too, wouldn't we? Because, I mean, these kids perpetrated this act on a computer. They put all of this stuff together and made these terrible statements, and those are the things that incited the riot, in my opinion, or whatever the problem was that we had with it. But I just, where does it stop when you start banning things? I mean, I know we're an all-inclusive and diverse and all that good stuff, but where does it stop? You know, a number of years ago, and I don't know if you two folks might have been on the board at the time, we were basically forced to remove one of the finest books ever written, A Land Remembered, because somebody took exception to one word that was in that book. That's a disgraceful thing for this district as far as I'm concerned. But where does it stop when you start removing stuff? And you know, none of these things have anything to do with the learning that we're charging that superintendent with making sure that this district goes forth with.
Yeah, I'd actually like to follow up on some of Ms. Mendez's comments. And this surfaced in the discussion with the NAACP workshop 2 weeks ago, in that we can talk about the flag and the symbols, but it's really more the behavior and the sentiments that are being expressed by the students involved. And we need to really work on that more so than the symbols. And so Dr. Torres continues to tell you, we've already had discussions about what can we do to foster that sense of tolerance and valuing everybody's differences and the diversity that's in our buildings and that kind of thing. You know, we thought we were making progress in some of these campuses on that. We'll go back and look at what types of things we're doing in the primary years, intermediate years, middle school years, and high school years to make sure that we're doing a good job of showing that cultural sensitivity to everybody's differences. And if there's additional training or modules of learning that we need to put in place, or if there are clubs we need to create, or whatever we need to do to attack that part of it, to create that climate that Ms. Menes was talking about, where the kids feel totally comfortable being at school, they're all respected for their diverse opinions and their diverse backgrounds and so on. We actually already have created some training for the adults that we're going to have ready for all of our employees for next year. It's based on some diversity training that some of our employees went through recently that they found very valuable. So we're going to train a cadre of people this spring and then have every one of our employees trained in it next year. And so that, it's about valuing everybody's differences. And part of one of the modules is about teaching students of different diverse backgrounds and that kind of thing. So we'd rather take a proactive approach of trying to figure out how do we create an environment where everybody feels safe and respected, rather than focusing on consequences for certain symbols and stuff like that. Now, if people use those symbols to create a disturbance, then they're going to be dealt with swiftly and appropriately, which is what we did in that one situation. I've talked with some superintendents around the state who have had issues like this, and that seems to be the most effective focus is to look at the incidences of misbehavior and handle them individually and address them. We can't legislate morality. Our job is to try to teach these kids how to be good young citizens, and I think so we can focus on that. Like Dr. Martinez said, the work with the committee is not over, but we didn't get any feedback from the committee that they wanted to pursue a ban.
I have to say that's a book. You can't legislate morality. I think that's really what the subject is at this hearing. And I am nervous with the example. I mean, so this is to say, I don't think there was consensus of any bans, but I think that Ms. DiAgresta, even discussing how the Cinco de Mayo, that the reverse discrimination against the American flag, because that was their day to wear the, flag of the day for that culture group, it starts becoming. So I think it is culture, it's morality, it's a and that's why we hire
someone to do that administration and that philosophy and bring, you know, what we get behind. And I think that not everyone knows how we feel. And I certainly trust that. If there's any other further input, we can hear it. Mr. Brooks.
Thank you. I'll be brief. I'm not interested in banning any symbols because for one of the main reasons this amendment's mentioned is that it would actually limit our opportunities to learn how to disagree agreeably. And I feel like we need to be courageous enough to face the symbols and not confuse the symbol for the thing. You know, to be completely against racism is completely compatible with allowing someone else to favor a certain symbol, and that's just important. Also, symbols change over time through the history of them. Look up the swastika and where that came from. So.
And apparently these kids were pretty smart because they included a number of different hate symbols in their message. They put, I say hate symbol, because I don't consider the flag a hate symbol. And I wonder when it is that these, and apparently we heard the other day from NAACP, it's the black children that feel threatened by this flag. When is it that they get that idea that that flag means somebody's going to beat me up? When does that come into play? You know, we're starting at the middle and high school level to try to be training these folks to be more compatible with each other and not think that these symbols are bad. Where do they get that idea that it is bad? You know, I didn't go through a stage with my three sons saying, now listen, this flag, I mean, this means there's going to be some fights at school. I didn't do that. And I don't know if other groups do that, but it just... We don't need to ban. We need to work together. I mean, if we're all going to be on the same page, then everybody's going to give a little bit, in my opinion.
Ms. Moyer?
Yes.
It's regardless of, you know, I hear everybody's opinion about symbols of the flag, and that's not what concerns me as much as I feel that. I feel like in the discussion process that there were some subtle uses of the word, of words and shades and things put out that are less than truthful. And
for example.
And that will concern me again. I just made a call and I talked to two people. The reflection of the process. And I sat and worked, I know, for about 4 hours one day around comments and things to use in that meeting because I was not able to go to those. And I think the representation for the fact that Dr. Rendell, you know, immediately went to the neighborhood. I got the call, it was really late after meeting that, you know, that was had by some ministers in the community. Then I guess on Saturday, I get the call while I was at church that Dr. Rendell wants to have from Freddie Woolford, that Dr. Rendell wants to have a meeting in the community. And it's caused some divisiveness even in the community. And it was supposed to be on Monday at 5:30. And so I it just feels like a representation of how things occur, what actually happened in the meetings. I guess maybe we need to videotape those too.
Well, I didn't really find that wrong, what you said.
I'm sorry.
I find that wrong, what you said.
That's your
upset. That is. Is there anything further? Mr. Cross.
So I just wanted to say, in closing, as we move on, then Dr. Rendell, my understanding is that you are going to work with your staff to make sure that we create a school climate that is inclusive of all our students.
Yeah, I think that's a mission we should have from the beginning. It shouldn't have taken this kind of incident or discussion to focus us on that, but now that we have that focus, we'll make sure that we work on that. But I'll give the board periodic updates on, you know, different things that we're doing to address that.
Any other news from the Code of Conduct Committee or anything like that?
And since it is, and I'm not correcting you, Dr. O'Neill, but I don't know that we're not operating on that premise right now.
Yeah, right.
And the fact that we just had, like, there are no laws and rules not to bring guns to school, and yet we had two boys bring guns to school. When there's rules and codes of conduct, dress codes, not every, they'll never get 100% compliance. So I don't want to, I didn't want to correct you, but we may not be doing such a bad job. We may have room for improvement. We may have some weaknesses and strengths within our school district. But I would definitely say that you understand the, you know, sentiment of what we're trying to accomplish. Either, you know, start from ground zero or look into it, but you know where our heads are at, you know what we want, and I just wanted to say, you know, it's a shame that an incident came up, but I wouldn't want to say that we're not doing something well either. It's just we have to always be sensitive, and as a board, I think that's what we're saying, and I think, you know, what you expect from us is,
a comment and a question. You know, and I think it's all relative, because I have had conversations with individuals that do feel disrespected in our school district, adults and students alike. Now, the fact that that happens doesn't mean that it's a bad school district. It just means that in any organization, you may have standards and policies. You know, the simple example, we have these policies about no sweets in the schools, and there are sweets in the school all the time. You know, and it all depends. So nobody is saying, get rid of the policies, or, you know, we just have to be real.
Sure.
There are students and adults that feel that because of their skin color or whatever, they are not being respected. That's just a reality. It doesn't mean that we're saying that the whole school is bad. So I just wanted to make that clear, because I think that that's really important. The same thing with the Confederate flag. It's a historical, there's a historical context for that, but with that history come a lot of stories of lynchings and discrimination and hatred. Not that that's what you would teach your child, but that we can't get away from that historical reality. So two comments. I apologize. Now, my question is there, in some of this information we've gotten, there was mention of an incident where a student drove to one of our high schools, I don't know if it was Sebastian or Beach High School, with a flag, and another student took it, or can you tell us what actually happened, and if there was any consequence as a result of that action? Because I never really heard about it. It's all been hearsay.
So this was back in August before school actually started. It was during one of the days where students go to school to get their schedules, the orientation or registration day. It happened at Vero Beach High School. In the parking lot, a student actually from Sebastian River High School had parked their truck in the parking lot because his friend was attending Vero Beach High School, and he was there to support his friend as they went to registration. In that student's truck, there was a Confederate flag on a post in the bed of the truck. While that student was inside the building going through the registration process with their friend, a student at Beach High School saw the flag and proceeded to go into the truck and snap the post that the flag was on and throw it down on the ground. That was witnessed on videotape. Some of the other students that were in the area took video of it on their phones. Posted that to Facebook, I believe, or some social media. It was brought to the attention of the administration. The student who broke the post and threw the flag on the ground did receive consequences for that.
And what consequences?
Out of school suspension, I believe.
Was the resource officer, is that his question?
Law enforcement was notified. I can't recall what the outcome of that was.
That's an example of how we think that these emblems are, you know, don't offend people, and not that it's justifiable.
Well, and there's tolerance too. I'm going to tell you, there's a certain female candidate that's running that offends me terribly well. And when a car pulls up and they've got a bumper sticker with that name on it, I do everything to stay contained in my vehicle. But tolerance is what we must practice as well. So I think you're right. This is all a learning experience.
Yeah, absolutely. the idea of bringing it forth and putting having it in someone's face and the reaction. It's a two-way street.
It's a two-way street.
So it truly is. So thank you for that clarification, because what happens is a lot of times we hear about these things, it all becomes hearsay, and nobody really knows what happened. So I was glad to understand that particular situation. Thank you.
So moving on, Mr. Fox, right?
Thank you.
Mr. King? Nothing. Sure.
So tired, I feel like crap.
Looks like they.
I know.
I felt like that the last day.
Last day or two.
Three more.
And by the way, thank you, Dave Russell. That was a lot of work. I appreciate it.
How much work?
A lot of little work.
Yeah.
Mr. Susie? Oh, no. Yes, Mr. Susie, you're next.
Oh, I was thinking about April 4th, 15th is a bad day for math.
Lindsay,
you can. Mark on up.
I don't know if you folks got that email. There's some nice lady in the press sent me an email, sent all of us an email. I sent it to Judy yesterday, asked her to give me copies of it, but nobody seemed to have gotten it. And we all had, she sent it to our addresses. And is there any way that emails coming from outside can be blocked coming to our telephones?
Spam. You go into a spam folder, which, you know, we check, but, you know, pretty soon you have an entire thing about Viagra and Russian ladies
about
and all those things.
What kind of site you're going to?
I don't go to any site. You can pull it up. It's a public record. Without that, if your internet, if your email address is on the internet, a spam bot will find it. But anyway, yes, it can be.
I didn't get an email from a female.
Well, can you be specific? Because
I was
an email from female reporter.
Does it need to be censored?
I asked Judy to make sure that each of you had copies of it. I can't send it to you, but I sent it to her and asked her, did you get a copy?
She just got back yesterday.
I'm not sure. Well, she was in the office when I sent it to her, maybe she didn't get the email. It just kind of bothered me because the nice lady called me about it, and then she sent it to my business address, and I could get it. But I just wanted to find out if there was any way that the district could screen the emails that come to us.
We do have a spam filter, and there are. I don't know enough about how this operates. Mr. Green can come and give us a little bit of an explanation. But so certain types of emails are automatically flagged and put in the spam filter. If an email gets through that shouldn't, if we alert the technology department, they can then flag that email address and it won't get through it again. So we can go into the filter and see what's been caught and not let through, and we can also, if something gets through that shouldn't, we can then put it on the filter to not come through in the future.
And Judy has the email, so I can
Are you upset because you've given someone sent you something and you didn't respond and you were upset that you didn't have the opportunity? Is that the concern? Or?
My concern is somebody sent an email to all the school board members and no school board member actually.
You didn't actually get it.
We didn't get the information.
Okay. Was there a shit upset about that?
And they wanted information. Response anyway. And you know, one of the things that I think that we're responsible to do is if we get a response. An email or a call, we're to return that call whether we say anything or not. But if we don't get it, it comes back to Ms. Menez's statement back there that people say that things aren't going just exactly right in the district and you know, they're not respected. And, well, how do you call somebody back if you don't know they called you?
There was a time where the email was down for, was that this month of 2 days? Or was it
March 31st?
It was about 3 weeks ago the emails were down from somebody that was might have been around that time.
And I think, you know, you're talking specifically about the media. You know, we do have someone that works in that arena for the board. And I think that you also have to be mindful every time the media contacts us, you don't have to jump. I mean, I know I've had situations where the media has misrepresented my statements. And, you know, so I tell them, if that's what you're going to do, I'm not going to be engaging in conversation. I will speak at board member matters. I will speak at different you know, I will get my message out, but I don't need you to translate my message. So, you know, it's all relative. I don't know who you're talking about, so I don't really have a context. But, you know, I think it's a very fluid thing. And I think we as board members also have to have our boundaries in terms of who we allow to tell our story. So not knowing what you're talking about, I only speak generally from my own personal experience, because it could be one of these reporters that, you know, and I would say, I have no comment. You know, I would respond, but my response would be, I have no comment. And we, you know, we have the freedom to do that.
Yeah. That's not even the issue. The issue is if somebody sends an email to a school board, elected school board member, we need to be able to receive that email, and we can send it back and tell them to shut it, whatever you want to tell them. But if we're not getting the information.
You're saying it's how our state belongs.
Right. I wrote it down there to check with Mr. Green to find out why that email didn't get through.
And, you know, because of what we have at home and all that stuff, that I know sometimes they're too tight, and well, for good reason, especially in a school district. So depend on that lady, how her, sometimes I don't know what flags it, the way they wrote it, but yeah, I mean, he's going to check on his band longer, but sometimes they're reasonable. The firewall, there we go. Not a happy person. The firewall is very strong, which is a good thing, but sometimes, right,
right, sometimes too strong.
Just too strong. And then you have to go in. It's really popular and click that it's okay that they can come in. And it's, you know, so you would have to click that lady that it's okay to come in, and you wouldn't know until she knows, tells you that you didn't get it. And they, I know in governments they do that. They're very strong, but I would imagine the school district should be even stronger because of the youth on them. I'm guessing.
Our spam filter is pretty strong.
So that might be it.
Yeah, but we'll find out what flag hit the
problem. Hopefully I'll get that email and know what you're talking about, yeah.
Too. Well, I mean, I sent it to you. I can't
send it
to you. So.
Point of order, he can send it to us as long as we don't record it.
One way communication does not technically violate the law.
Thank you.
I'm not going to chance that.
Yeah, sure.
We
could
be experimenting if you want to.
Yes, yeah.
Exactly. Responsible.
Mr. Mann, excuse me.
That should be it for this round.
Okay. Mr. Mann. I have put on,
but they don't have them. This is an announcement. You know, there's like 25 schools, and now we have graduation from elementary to middle school to whatever. First of all, I want to say that I kept up with graduations very well until my dad got sick last year. I will, so I missed the high school ones and the GD, which those I really enjoy those, but I will try to, since I think it was called before, and I can't remember who, but someone jumped up for me, and I thank you. I will try to take as many as I can, but I will pass the list when Judy. So if you see it, maybe we got to talk to her about, was she getting the mailbox?
You're not bringing the mailboxes over here, so.
Awesome. So I will have her get that list of, graduation ceremonies, stepping up, as they call them, some wave and pebble, because sometimes we might be top heavy with three people going to Sebastian Middle School and nobody going here. And I know that we want to represent, but, you know, if we get like three people going one thing, and, you know, maybe we can spread it out, but I'll try to fill in as many of those blanks as I can before I send it out for a round. Okay? That's what I wanted to do. Now, Mr. Frost?
No, ma'am.
Ms. McCain? Stacy?
Well, just make sure that whenever you do the assignments, Matt has to have support at both Vero Beach and Sebastian to keep him up with keeping up with where all the students are going to go to college. Apparently last year we found out that was a marvelous way to spend our time up there. So,
Amen.
And if anything to pass the time.
Yeah.
What did I miss?
They would ask where they're going to college, and if they said University of Florida, they'd receive an extra handshake. But they were doing an informal survey.
And a whole story about he saved Gal Bundy saved the pass at something back in the
4 touchdowns.
4 touchdowns.
We were losing in Sebastian because the majority of them were going to the University of Central Florida, which is fantastic, by the way. It was a fun experience.
They are very good.
What did you say?
Just new seats.
New seats.
I have a question about the conversation around the virtual school. We're only starting with 2 classes.
This summer, correct?
This summer. And so what's the plan moving forward?
So there's a longer list of classes to offer, and starting in the fall. And eventually want it to be basically a full-time option for anybody who lives in our area. And we'll probably have to staff it. We'll probably have to put an administrator in charge of it and a clerical person, because we're probably going to generate that much interest. We did a mailer about the virtual school, IR Virtual, New River Virtual, to all of our families and to homeschool families. We have a list from the local homeschool association, and we've gotten a lot of feedback, calls in, people want to enroll in the fall and in the summer. So we're already registering people for those classes. So it's going to take off.
And are there any concerns? I recall maybe a year or two ago when I was looking at some of these contracts that we have with the other providers. I may be wrong on this, but I thought I read something about if students don't have access to computers. I know that I think Florida Virtual actually will provide them a device. Is that accurate? Am I remembering that correctly?
Because
I know there was an access. I remember when my kids were here, my daughters were here at Vero Beach High School, at one point they allowed the schedule to start. The students were allowed, and they were taking a virtual school class, to come in, do the first period virtual school or the last period virtual school, so they could either do it in the library or at home. So that was one thing in terms of access. Because there are kids that may not have.
And we still have that option. Okay. We still do those things. I don't know about Florida Virtual providing computers to students. Okay. One of the things that we do need to clarify is that Florida Virtual and all the other virtual options will still be options. IR Virtual is just a choice. Mm-hmm. It's one of their options that they can choose when they register. So when they go to a counselor's center and take some virtual courses, we'll show them what we offer, we'll show them what Florida Virtual offers. They still have a choice. Even if it's a course we offer, they can still choose the Florida Virtual option. So we are an option, and we will probably see quite a bit of enrollment.
But we lose money if they go somewhere else, correct?
Yes, sir.
So when you say there's a lot of interest, that means there's a lot of retained revenue potential?
Yes, sir.
Just in my terms.
And
they're encouraged if we have fewer than 8 students to go to the other one, because that's our PE, right? Just 8 students. And the counselors with whom they register are employees of whom?
They work for us.
That's right. Okay. This is all good.
Great. I wanted to talk about the charter schools, sending a letter to the charter schools regarding the DFA requirement of student-teacher ratio. We are all in agreement that we're looking for addressing issues that are in the DSEG order as far as student ratio of African American students, the certain numbers that we have within our schools, the certain number of teachers in relationship, and charter schools are public schools, but they have their own. They're mostly autonomous in a sense. So, what I think that which I'm probably going to ask the attorney here, wouldn't it be just, how you do best practices, that since we're looking at community, wouldn't it be maybe important for us to send a letter to say we are
inquiring as to your current statistics of those ratios, if you are meeting the desegregation order, and if you are not and falling short, what is your plan for compliance? I think we should memorialize it as a board, because as this board goes forward in a status of unity and trying to make things better for the schools that our administrator governs, we really are not governing over the individual charter schools and their principals, and so I think it should be board to board, that asking them if they could, this board does a letter as such just for those statistics. Whether they comply or not, I'm not talking about the velvet hammer or anything like that through the letter, but at least that as we move down the ball down the field in this process, if it was ever, as I said, as we get closer to reaching unity and we don't have any address and we fall short in those schools, this board in good faith was saying we're working with our charter schools, making where we fall short, inquiring to see if they fall short. And how are you falling short? Maybe you're not falling short, just let us know. And I'm sure we could pull those stats up somehow, but I really don't feel it's the right way for us to pull stats and guess and then say you're not complying. I think we should have a very well-orchestrated letter that says the board, and I wish I could, verbally draft one quickly right now and tell you, I'm trying to express my sentiment, if you're getting it, that the interest of the board has been to take a serious look at our deseg order, and we are moving towards a status of unity. At this time, we're reviewing our statistics and our of each school as far as student population and teacher population. We are inquiring as to your ratio in these matters, and if you are meeting the DSEG order, if you do not have a copy of the DSEG order, we'll be glad to supply. And furthermore, if you are not in compliance, what is your timeline for getting into compliance or reaching compliance? Maybe getting into compliance is not the proper verbiage, but, reaching compliance in the ever-so professional manner. I think, is this something that we would, since we have decided to go through consensus, is this something the board would like to do? But before you guys weigh in, I wanted to ask, that's why I wanted to bring it up, and I wanted to ask the attorney, do you think that's a good practice, a good way to go in what we're trying to reach?
It's certainly allowable. It's something that this school board discussed several years ago to bring charter schools more closely into the conversation with regards to the desegregation order and certain information from the charter schools. So it's certainly allowable. The state law that governs charter schools speaks in general terms regarding demographics of charter schools are to generally mesh with the surrounding schools. There's federal law that also, a little more stringently, says that they shall comply with all federal requirements, including a desegregation consent order. So there's certainly a legal basis to do so, and it's certainly something that we can do. I know Dr. Rendell in all the technology does have information with regard to charter school demographics, both for employees, I think, and students. So that information would easily, I mean, easily, but you can get it. Certainly provided to the charter school and say, this is what we have in our system. Is it accurate? Inaccurate? Do you have something that would perhaps, clarify it? And then once you agree on that data, say, okay, now here's what the law, here's what our federal order says, what action, what plan do you have put in place in order to come into compliance? If needed.
So do you think it should be a two-part process saying that, was, responding to the status, or the board, board to board, and that the school board is in the process of trying to attain unity status and reviewing the DSEG order. This is the statistics that we have on your school. Could you please just verify? So
we could do it that way as a one step and a two step, and then it comes back, and if they're not in compliance, say, according, then our attorney can review it there. According to, or our administrator, according to the DSAG order and your statistics, you are not in compliance. Would you please, and we're not sure that you were aware of that, when can you please let us know your plans to accomplish that goal or something like that? But I really feel that it should be board to board, and I really think that we should address it, because you can't go all the way up. Us working so hard and then get up to the point where we're going in front of a federal judge and we put a leg up to the rug, and then and we've never even called upon the charter school to say, if that is the missing piece, never write a letter, never ask for statistics, never address that. So can I have some input, because I want to know if Mr. Foster first.
I have
a
simple. In principle, I agree with the idea, and I totally understand the defensive aspect of it, if you will, and we're doing everything we can to reach out to these specific stakeholders. I do have two concerns. The first concern is one school has very different demographics, and it's huge. Mm-hmm. And I'm concerned that they're not going to be in compliance because they have an abundance of students that, we're trying to teach and keep educating. So that's one concern. Also, Beltran is going to be out of compliance. Well, they're not sure.
No, but they have the same. But Mr. Frost, I agree with you, and that's. And I'm not saying that is that is a real demographics, but there's busing, there's this, or there's we've tried, or there's whatever. So I agree with you.
And the second thing, and that's kind of where that was heading, is that whenever you receive a letter from the district, the sponsor of charter schools, there's always, it's like when the boss asks you to work on a weekend. Now, there's always the threat of power of action is ubiquitous, and I want to make sure that we know that this isn't an effort to end their charter if they don't have compliance or only the that's what my own concern.
Mr. Dr.
Medicine.
Mr. Medicine, yes.
Thank you.
This little mommy going on here.
Thanks. No, I agree with you. I think that if the school district is serious about looking at what our practices are, I think I'm a little less optimistic about being ready for unitary status just because of the achievement gap and other issues that we have. And I do think it's wise to strategize in that sense, because when you look at the information we got from the current law firm and when you look at the information we've got in the past from Ms. DiAbresta's law firm, one of the concerns Mr. Brown had in the original letter maybe 6-7 years ago was the fact that the charter schools were often not in compliance. And historically, the board did try to include a document in the contract with the charter schools asking for that information, providing the data and their plan, because Ms. DiAbresta and Mr. Brown explained to the board that when it comes to compliance with the DSEG, it's really about making the best honest effort, because you can't physically take children of one group and stick them in a school. That it doesn't work like that, especially not with charter schools. But I think the discomfort has been around the unwillingness to even share a plan of your best effort to recruit those students. So I think that this letter will put us in a position looking forward that there, if there is non-compliance, that we did all that we could to get to encourage them to be in compliance. We can't force them. But I do think it's important that we get the information and that we ask them if they're not in compliance with their fullness. Because that's going to come up at some point if this board really wants military status. That's
going to
be an issue.
I just wanted to task Mr. Green with getting with each of the charter schools and reviewing their data and maybe reporting back to us what he found. Before we issue a letter, he's developed a really good relationship with each of the charter schools. I task him with this to say, by the time next time, 2 weeks from now, when the board meets, and you need to have a conversation with each of the charter schools, review their data. Do they have an action plan? Do they not have an action plan? Put that in writing, memorialize that in some way, and bring a report back to you.
And that's what I wanted. Some sort of memorializing that, just that, hey, are you doing it? No. And that doesn't hold up. Anyway.
And it's a two-way thing. They may not be aware that they, within the charter law, can set seats aside. They can begin such remedy segregation order. They can begin with their lottery by setting these number of seats aside. And that is an option. So they may not be aware of that. But that can be in the education.
Sure.
One of the things that, you know, I was tasked to do was develop better relationships with the charters. So we fire off a letter to them,
And it's something I thought we should address, and I think that's a workable solution. Is that agreeable to everyone? Mr. Searcy?
I have a question about Mr. Menace's comment that a number of years ago you tried to work something in the contract that addressed that. Is that piece still in every one of the contracts now that they... And why did we take that out if we were advised by the attorneys to, I mean, I think I've heard you say that we were advised by the attorneys to put that in a contract. Why did we take that out of the contract?
I don't think it was really that the attorney advised. It was that the board, you know, one of the things that the board talked about, and they felt that that would help with compliance. But after the conversation, unfortunately,
so it's not
the board
now.
Said no. You know, was ready, and the board in the end voted it down. It was voted down, so we don't have it.
Thank you for doing that.
Is it true?
Is it false? Is it okay? Is it serious? Is it nice? I'll read my final item. Susan? Sure. I'll read my final item. And it kind of, it was going to bring it up because we all got the letters from charter schools. We do work on admissions at charter schools. I spoke in my super big one. But, you know, it's sort of a, you're not, you're public, and, you know, but I was very upset that charter high school students as a classroom, it was very obvious, those letters were anonymously dropped off, wanting money from this school district board members to fulfill their wish list. I will tell you how I handled it. And I felt very upset that some teacher or some board may not know, or some teacher or some principal allowed a political letter writing campaign and asking for a wish list, and all I did was say, thank you for being engaged, I really expect your involvement, I respect your involvement in government, I'm paraphrasing, but you may not be aware you have a school board of your own. They are responsible for your code of conduct, they are responsible for your financial expenditures, and how they spend your money improving your schools. I would suggest you check with your principal on the next board meeting date and attend. Again, thank you for sending the information and being involved in your school. So that's how I handled it. But I do tell you that I am very disappointed, and I feel that I will bring that up with that board when I see them, because that's my feeling. I think using children as pawns is very, I just think that's wrong, because they didn't use their home addresses. It wasn't from, you know what I mean? We don't know. And, you know, it was anonymously dropped off instead of saying, we had class project and this was the thing. And the school board, I mean, I think it's just, I think it's dirty politics. If it was up front with a little bit more on how that project came to be, I might have digested it a lot better. So if anybody has any comments, but, you know, they've certainly been right, but I just don't like it when teachers direct them to and not give, we don't know that they have the full information about something.
Right. I don't disagree, and I support that sort of activism, because I think it's absolutely no different than when a parent from Beachland comes in and complains about the state of their school at a school board meeting. I mean, you may not agree with the method or the tactic, if you will, but I think that advocating for students, by students, and if it's on teacher time and the teacher pays it, those things, I don't see, you know. And again, we're public servants.
Well, I agree. As I said, if that was, you know, so somebody from Beachland or somebody from NAACP or somebody would say, come and they clearly say, here I am, who I am, and this is what I am, and I fill out the sheet, and here you go. An anonymous, in the dark of the night, drop off, but you can tell it, and you don't know how that was presented. Big, bad school district has all our money. And may and shall, and they don't, and you don't, I mean, it wasn't a full, transparent, I just don't feel, I will only be left to believe that the children were not, it was a campaign not made in transparency, because the delivery of the letters weren't made in transparency. But I would agree with you, as someone who's been out there on one side of the podium, up to the dais, and back to the podium, and down to the parent, one day, school board member another, everybody should have a right to speak and not be squelched, but when it's orchestrated by teachers with, that was my problem, it was the way. It was not so much what they said, it was not crafted by, it came in an anonymous envelope to our secretary, and every student had the school address.
I'm pretty sure we received some things from Oslo Middle that was a teacher assigned around our calendar and said,
I was just going to say.
I'm just glad that kids are engaged in what their government is doing and they care enough to write a letter.
I would like them to be engaged, but I don't like them use this pause. So we have no idea what they were told. We have no idea what they were told. And from the looks of the letter, it seems like they didn't know they had their own school board that made their own financial decisions. So I will be left to say that without knowing that, and the way the letters came in, that's the way I will just tell you. I was offended that there was no mention of their school board. It wasn't like they CC'd the school board, our board, and everybody in the world. So I feel that, I'll have to leave it with, I just think it was very, this is the same school that drug tests to enter students into their school, and I don't think they should. This is the same school that I'm getting emails on questionable material and curriculum that's very risque, but use it as grammar correction. So I can't not help think that when there's no, this was a class assignment, that it's not the school doing a political thing. So that's just, again, this is a discussion, it's my opinion, it's not an action item. I just really had the need when you were talking about walking on eggshells. It's almost like reverse discrimination. Well, you were saying about a letter, but
the word.
No, you said something about a letter, but you you don't want to be like, the boss, you're in my office. Well, I that's a two-way street. I don't like anonymous letters coming like, us poor children have been informed that you don't give us money. Really? Who told you that? You have your own board. You have your own financial structure. So, not knowing, I just thought if you drop off letters anonymously like that, using children, is very sad. I know we have board committee reports, so we shall move on. We'll start in my own. Mrs. Searcy?
Nope.
And think committees? Ms. Jimenez? No. I mean, two detached garages in Sebastian. I'm sure you don't want to hear about it. And Mr. Frost? Mr. McCain's after
no,
Mr.
I'm
Frost.
No, I'm not.
Covering your back.
MPO, in your 92nd Court, out where I live in BLE. They're putting in sidewalks and drains and things like that, and hopefully the superintendent has some more news for us. One of the members of the MPO asked for access through 92nd Court for our students and even some other, the general public, so that they would be able to access, if you've ever been out there, 92nd Court it goes into the back side of Sebastian over high school. It's kind of where we pull in for graduation. What they were looking for is a pedestrian data source. So I don't know if Dr. Rundell has any updates on that.
Sure. So there's a sidewalk project going on in Grover Lake Estates, and there's a sidewalk in front of Sebastian River High School that goes down 510 towards the shopping center and kind of thing. There is no sidewalk south of the high school. No sidewalk connecting Grover Lake Estates to 510. So they were asking if there was a way they could put a sidewalk gate, on the sidewalk to that 92nd Court entrance to the parking lot at Sebastian River High School.
and then allow the pedestrians to walk basically down the parking lot or entrance of Ashton River High School in front of the school to access the sidewalk that does begin there. So Scott Sanders met with some representatives from the county commission or the county building department, and we have given them a proposal that we could give them an easement on the south side of the campus there to put a sidewalk from where 92nd Court would enter our property down alongside that right-of-way or whatever, and then connect to the front of the school. Our only ask is that we would that they would put a six-foot-high fence along the sidewalk so that during off hours, you know, we don't have to worry about access to the campus from the sidewalk, that kind of thing. So currently, we have worked out some kind of arrangement where, you know, a proposal that they would have access to that area of land to build the sidewalk, but I don't know where we are with the proposal.
Okay. Well, that was just a question I asked that we could use a different staff or take management. You want me to just do my second thing?
Might as well just go through it. Right.
The only other thing is that I have to eat my hat here. I went to the Treasure Coast Council of Local Governments and received one of the best educations I could have on the idea of employee benefits and the coming fiscal cliff, if you will. It was basically the Big Short, but it was about pensions and retiree Medicare, or medical coverage, health care coverage. And I will forward you the presentation, but this, it was the Cavalier from Tom, you're short. He's a councilman, he's a brilliant man, and obviously the background in finance. And I think that his presentation was very informative and asked for it in PowerPoint, and I just thought I'd share that with you. He essentially calculated how much each municipality that is a member of that would have to begin funding their pension, and it was like Vero Beach, even though they had taken austerity measures, would have to raise taxes by 150% for the next 10 years in order to cover the whole. And I think that, you know, it's very timely considering everything going on. And one of the things he brought up was the idea that actuaries, they are hired to go along and keep telling you that you're going to be okay and things along those lines. So having a good handle on the actual financial situation will lead to fewer surprises. I hope you can come. He said he couldn't understand our financials, so he can do offers. And I said, I understand 100%. Yeah, I know you worked in private equity. I never worked in private education. So I'm hoping he can have, you know, if he's willing, he'll have a look at ours and maybe come to that same presentation to us in a workshop. You know, it was a 15-minute presentation.
Thank you for that.
Yeah,
was this one of the ones that we were
going to... Well, that was exactly it. That's me in my hat. It was totally worth it, $200.
Awesome.
And my time, my 3 hours, 1 hour down, 1 hour back, and an hour. And so.
Maybe that workshop, that 15-minute presentation can be done when you have that insurance workshop that's been postponed.
Maybe. I will see, you know, super good.
It could help.
Hey, maybe. Is there an
AED?
So that's it for my committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that. Then let's move on to superintendent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to hand out for you on some possible dates for community meetings. Several weeks back, the board did direct me to explore the possibility of meeting out in the community. And this is what we've come up with so far. We actually had some other dates and ideas planned that we had to scrap for various reasons. The first thing on the list is not a community meeting, so to speak. It's that I'll be doing a State of the Schools address on Thursday, April 28th. I'll be right here in the TEC. I didn't put the time at 6 p.m. And we'll televise that live. My estimation is it'll be about 45 minutes. Documents, that kind of thing.
That
That's 8/28 at what time?
6 p.m.
Is that you alone?
Yes, ma'am.
So I'm taking my office. That's our spare lunchtime. Question. There's something on there. Or.
Check most of the calendars. I didn't see any school events.
Is it Agnes Peoples?
I'll have that on
my agenda.
If it is, then we'll have to move.
No. It may not be a board issue. I mean, well,
okay.
We don't have to be here.
Correct.
Okay, so that's.
But I would probably get that. But anyway, it's been kind of hard to find dates where we don't, this time of year, where we don't have a lot of stuff going on. But it's my understanding in the past that the superintendents have presented a state of the schools message, but during the day, in a workshop format, just to the board and that kind of thing. So, you know, I'd like to do this in the evening. You know, it's open to the public and we'll televise it and that kind of thing. So we'll be doing that. The next few items are possibilities, you know, if we want to kind of get out into the community a little bit. This information session here, this discussion session, we don't televise these. So we don't have to worry about the technology that would be associated with having a workshop or a business meeting somewhere other than our building. So these are two proposed dates. I'm just looking for some feedback from you all if you'd be interested in having this type of meeting. So your May discussion session meeting, would you be interested in having it in a school, for example, Belton Island, that's in the north part of the county, it would be open to the public to attend. We have events at schools that are open to the public to attend during the school day. You know, sometimes we shy away from that because we're worried about disrupting the student day, but in this case, we don't usually have a large audience for something like this, so that's a possibility. If we were to have the meeting at the school, I would really like to take the opportunity if we're there, maybe tour the school and learn about some of the programs at the school. So even if members of the public or me are there, they would go on tours so they could see some of the things that are going on in the school. So on May 10th, that's just an idea. The same thing with May 24th. In this pattern that we've established, the second meeting of the month, that fourth Tuesday, the afternoon meetings have so far been typically my workshop time, and I'd be willing to give up my workshop time, so to speak, to have it be more of a discussion session at that time on May 24th. Then we can go to the school in the south, for example, Oslo, and again, maybe tour the school a little bit and then have the meeting and that kind of thing. So there's just ideas. We had mentioned before about just an open town hall meeting. There are some dates I've listed at the bottom where we, that I'm aware of, we don't have any big events going on that we could possibly hold town hall meetings. I don't know that we have any need for a town hall meeting at present, but if we wanted to, those are dates that are available. So I was just looking for some direction on the board, from the board on really the May 10th to May 24th idea and the town hall meeting ideas.
I mean, going out to a school is fine. We've done it before. We did it years ago. But, I mean, number one, I want to make sure that it's not going to be a disruption to the school, meaning because now somebody's got to put together a dog and pony show for us, and they got to take time out of their day and the principal and everything like that. And because if you're not going to do a tour or something like that, what's the reason for going?
Right. Well, and, I want to be there so at least more.
I mean,
maybe people need to access us so they don't come here.
In the middle of the day.
So, am I to understand, I'm looking at May 10th, you're suggesting that this would be the board discussion, but now?
Correct. No. This meeting we're in right now would be at a school. This is a suggestion.
Mrs. Minnis?
I like the idea. I don't think we'd have to do lunch. I think that might be disruptive. I mean, I don't know what the plan was, but I would think that maybe in terms of accessibility, it might be nice to do one during the day and then do another one in the evening so that there is opportunity, you know, for participation, because the people that can come, you know, during the day that are working, that segment of the stakeholders would be available. But I do like the idea of getting out to our schools and hearing a little bit about what's going on. I know that
we've always said that it's disruptive, and it will be a little disruptive because someone's going to have to plan this little presentation. But, you know, sometimes when I go to the schools, what I hear is that people are really glad to see board members come to their school. It sends a message that, you know, that we're engaged and we're visiting our school. So I do like that idea, but I try to do one during the day and not worry about
lunch. And the reason lunch was originally on the agenda is the first run of this has going to the two high schools that have fall air. So the kids were going to get to cook for you. But then we can't really do that at those schools at this time because we'll have, once we're finished with FSA, we're going to go right into AP and IB testing, and so we're going to stay away from those schools.
Is this the time that that's over on that testing, or are we really kind of interjecting into schools where there's still some testing going on?
With the FSA, we would be wrapped up at Putnam on May 10th, and with OSLO, we should be good by May 24th. That's kind of why I went to B school, but about the time we got to refine this again.
They do have the Agnes Peoples on that April 20th, but you know, we lose that time. And then for me, I would support all of the time zone things. Lunch, don't get lunch. I mean, it's the extra hours, and then get, you know, I mean, I think you're right, people might, but I mean, I would be willing, and thank you for researching, bringing that, and offering, and also putting it in time slots where we normally would meet, so it's not additional time. I would support trying the two, and just see how it goes. It's not a bad thing. We'll still be able to discuss, engage, and then we can have some information going back to ourselves that it worked, didn't work, doesn't matter. Matters. Mm-hmm. You know, so I would support that, but any input from anyone else?
Sure. You know, another thing that I thought about, because it is May, and you know, we're looking toward that end of school, you know, I've always thought it would be interesting to have some kind of a town hall meeting towards the end of the year and invite the community to come and share their successes. You know, what are the things that, besides the survey and everything, do just kind of have a conversation and invite them to share, you know, successes and challenges, or I don't know, you know, just having an open conversation. I know that historically that's always been threatening. Our school district really has always controlled any kind of town hall because we are always afraid that people are going to be so negative. But, you know, I think it's also a way of starting to build that trust with the community. You know, when I started on the board years ago, I actually did have meetings like that. People would open up their businesses and we would meet at their business and maybe 20, 25 people would show up and they would just tell me, you know. What I ended up finding that I had to do was I wasn't there to defend the school district or to jump in and join them on it. I told them I'm just there to listen, and then I would come back to the superintendent and sit with Dr. Lacava and say, you know, I met with some city, these are things that people were concerned about, and I just wanted to hear about it. You know, but I know that it would need some thinking so that it's not a free-for-all that one person comes in and grandstands the whole time. But it would be an opportunity towards the end of the year to just kind of, as we close, you know, before we start our summer programming, to have a conversation. And maybe, you know, no one may show up. I know we did that once and one person showed up.
So are you envisioning sort of like our business meeting but without staff being there? Is that sort of the thought?
Oh no, I'm just envisioning like a town hall where, you know, where you set a date, you say we're going to meet at the tech at 7 o'clock, and we're welcoming the community to have a conversation about how things are going. And we just want to hear what you have to say. And whoever, you know, we don't have to bring our staff to answer all the questions and things that people say, but we could just keep a running list of what's being said. and board members can come if they are able or not, and the superintendent, if the superintendent wants to be there, that'd be awesome too. But just like an opportunity of informal, not as much structure, and see what happens. And he did vote yes, yeah, so.
I'm not understanding what you're saying, but I think before we start clocking, different types of meetings, because the superintendent did put some work into this. Is this okay in front of us for now? Is this acceptable to, you want to move forward? It would be you doing our meetings, but on location, obviously with an opportunity for anyone to input if they want.
As long as the principals are okay with it.
Okay. Yeah, I would ask the members of the media that are here and any that listen to the tape, this schedule is not set in stone. We're just gagging about some ideas.
People may show up to be
put out there, hey, we're going to be at Dog Now on May 10th at 1 o'clock, we'll send something out for sure. But yeah, I kind of wanted feedback from the board, is this something you want me to pursue or not? Kind of thing. And I may move the state of the school's address if it's the Agnes people's. Anyway, so.
But well, you're just going to speak. You don't need me. It's not a meeting. You're not going to be like telling
us. Yeah, it doesn't accomplish anything. Right. Shouldn't be at that. So.
Oh, okay. I hear you.
I just looked it up online. I think it's May 10th, correct? The Agnes
people's? No, it's April 20th.
We'll check it out this week in the interviews. Yeah, we'll
check
it out.
We award.
So where are we? I
think this is fine, and you know what? If my date is wrong, but I think they rang a bell and it's on the board's schedule, April 28th, big night for Agnes Peoples. So if it's I'm wrong, he's right, or he's right, I'm wrong, you'll get that.
Right, we'll send some information out.
Thank you. But in spirit, the May for sure May 10th and May 28th, 24th, the board gave you consensus that's fine. This is pending.
Check with the school to make sure
that everything's fine. And then your state of the school, you'll get the alternative date if they're
right.
Which can eat in the lunchroom, right?
Pardon?
Which can eat in the lunchroom.
School cafeteria, sorry.
It ought to be that way that nobody has to do anything special.
We can do that.
I said that we could put out a dollar on the show or something like that. Food is there.
Sure.
Might be impressed.
I actually ate at Rivers Elementary last week and had orange chicken and rice, and it was really good.
At which school?
Rivers Elementary.
That's not on the list, Jake.
Do you want many good things?
Hey,
if it's that good, it's
that
good.
Don't
maintain it.
Mm-hmm. Just one more, thank you, Madam Chair. Tonight on the agenda, at the beginning of the meeting, I've asked the board chair to add some agenda items. One is a personnel agenda item that's going on the consent agenda. I talked to each of you initially about. The other two items, one appeared on the update yesterday, the other one came to us today. That we'd like to put on the agenda, they both have to do with the Citrus Bowl Phase 2. One is, and it showed on the agenda yesterday, was an action item to send a document to the state saying that we're going to demolish the buildings that we need to demolish as part of Citrus Bowl Phase 2, the concession stand, restroom, and those types of things. This is a step in the process that we have to go through to do all this. The second one is to then conduct an updated survey of that site, which we need before we go forward with getting it out to contract and all that kind of stuff. So these are steps in the process, and I'll have Mr. Morrison and Mr. Sanders talk to these tonight. But normally in perfect world, we get these to Judy in time to put on the agenda before it's published the week out. We could wait and put these on the agenda next time, but time is of the essence of both those projects, Beachland and Citrus Bowls, and we really want to kind of keep things moving. So that's why they're coming to the board and taking them to the chair to bring to the board tonight. And we'll talk more about it tonight.
Yes, but this doesn't in any way impede the work that we're doing on Citrus Bowl.
It doesn't impede anything. Okay, no, this keeps us on track. Yes, ma'am. And neither one of them are cost-related.
Okay.
We're not trying to rush and spend money or anything like that. These are steps in the process we have to do. Do the work.
And that did remind me, I did want to just talk to a little protocol. For transparency, we publish an agenda, and if there's an update, we do a, in the beginning of the agenda, we ask for any removals or additions or whatever. I know that I had asked that for if there's any discussion items where, when we get to the end where it says discussion, I'd ask respectfully that, you know, obviously, hopefully, we'll get them in ahead of time, so the same, get them on so people could say, hey, they're going to discuss this. I mean, it may not be an action item, but they're going to discuss it in transparency. I'll get in the car, I'll drive down, I'll turn the TV on, whatever way they want to do that. Obviously, if it is, doesn't make it in time, I don't know anybody that would refuse it, but respectfully, if you're going to discuss something that involves staff or, you know, all of us joining in, ask to add it during that where we're going to add yourself or where we say delete item, whatever. So under board members matters, that's really like a monologue, you know. So it just because Mrs. Stewart just said last week we talked about something under your matters. I'm just asking if you could put it under if you want to discuss something, put it just ask to add it to discussion, and this way we have a discussion, and this way if somebody's watching, they can get in their car and run down. Or they can whatever, but if it's under your matters, you know, that's usually what board matters is, because I had corrected the minutes and I just want to be consistent. And I also feel it's transparent that if you have something you want to discuss, it, get ahead in respect to staff and also for the public. And obviously things come up as it did for the superintendent this time, and there's a place on the agenda to add. Just housekeeping is all I'm saying. As a chair, I want to make sure that we're giving the public every opportunity to know, you know, what we're talking about. Even if it's last minute, we still have the vote to vote. We can vote to change it and add it and just say kind of within protocol of how the meeting agenda is done.
So you want it that done during the orders of the day?
Orders of the day. If I said, you know, any additions, deletions, whatever, if, let's say, Mrs. Suchi said, I'd like to discuss what's going on with the citrus bowl or something. All right. Under discussion, we'll add that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to move blah, 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 and then leave board members' matters for your matters. That what, you know, I disagree with high stake testing. I just had a wonderful time at the scholar ceremony or something. That's really what board members' matters, and then, you know, and then discussion. Like I said, I want to make sure that the public has every opportunity to know what we're going to discuss, even though we have an opportunity, and that we fairly add it to the agenda. Anything else? With that, then we'll adjourn at 7. We have a meeting at 4?
4 o'clock.